Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review and author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. We're back to our normal order today of the good coming first. This is a new poll from Quinnipiac University. They were asking people to gauge the best and worst president since the end of World War II. And for the first time in a while, George W. Bush does not have the dishonor of being labeled the worst since World War II. 33% of respondents now believe Barack Obama is the worst president in the last seven decades. 28% gave Bush the label. When it comes to the best president, 35% said Ronald Reagan. Bill Clinton, the top Democrat, at 18%. And so, Jim, when it comes to best and worst, obviously people's memories are freshest with the most recent of presidents, but especially given the recent spate of scandal after scandal from this administration, it shows that a decent number of people are paying attention, even though 33% could probably be chalked up as mostly GOP-based.
You're already seeing folks on the New Republic and various other places saying, oh, this poll doesn't really mean anything. It's, you know, people don't have long memories. They look at the past through rose-colored glasses, yada, yada. Okay, fine. This is not people truly evaluating the record of, say, Gerald Ford and comparing it to late Eisenhower or something like that. Even in that context, we can still say, look, people are feeling very negatively about President Obama and his performance. You look further down in that, 40% say he's doing a good job in the economy, 55% bad. Foreign policy, 37% good, 57% bad. Healthcare, 40% positive, 58% negative. He's doing okay on the environment. That one splits 40-50 in the good direction. And then on terrorism, for the president who authorized the mission to kill Osama bin Laden, you'd figure this would be a persistent strength for him, but he's negative 44% to 51% on this. And you figure some of that could be the Bo Bergdahl deal. Kind of wonder if the rise of ISIS in Syria and Iraq has people kind of feeling a little more nervous about the future, the announcement of the restoration of the caliphate and things like that. Why this is a good martini is that, look, we've been making the case that these policies don't work, that there was going to be a steep price to be paid for them, and that, you know, whatever you think of George W. Bush, and undoubtedly he made some mistakes, but there was a perception of him as a failed president by the very end of his administration that I kind of feel was a little bit unfair, that he had certain areas we on the right would argue with the way he handled, say, spending, and maybe, you know, the Iraq and Afghanistan operations look like a little too heavy in the realms of democracy promotion. But George W. Bush did not come into office with a pocket full of liberal ideas that he was going to implement and show the world that liberalism could work. Well, Barack Obama is showing the world that liberalism doesn't work, and a good chunk of the public is starting to recognize this. I think it's very likely that by the end of Obama's term in January 2017, he will be seen as failed a president as George W. Bush was when he left office. And it's kind of stunning. You can argue this has come a little late. You know, probably the most painful statistic in this poll was a statement that 45% of voters said America would be better off if Mitt Romney had won, while 38% say the country would be worse off. So America, we were trying to tell you that in, say, 2012, and you just didn't listen to us.
Nobody wanted to hear it. Obviously, it's nice to see. It's good to see that Ronald Reagan is still appreciated on a level that we certainly knew existed at the time of his passing in 2004, given the adulation there. And the numbers didn't get any better for Obama in this poll. 54% saying that the administration is not competent in running the government. Overall approval remains at 40%. Those are pretty lousy numbers. Of course, if they had allowed the survey to go back beyond World War II, I'm sure, you know, folks like Chester Arthur and Benjamin Harrison would have come out on top, but we'll never know for sure until they do those numbers. I'm just kidding, obviously.
See, it'd be kind of fun to like get ordinary Americans to get into that argument. That guy who I barely remember is way worse than the guy that we spent 5 minutes on in grade school.
Yeah. Oh, good times. All right, on to the truly bad martini now. And obviously, as Jim mentioned, there's a lot of things literally blowing up in the Middle East right now. One of the latest to circle back around, because we've certainly seen it many times before, is terrorism conducted most likely by Hamas. They haven't claimed responsibility for it yet, but it's the murder of those three Israeli teenagers in Gaza as they were hitchhiking home in the mid-June. Their bodies were discovered earlier this week. There was a national day of mourning in Israel on Tuesday for that. The Israeli response has begun. There was shelling into Gaza. There are reports that a Palestinian teenager was found dead, I believe, yesterday as well. And so who knows how this will potentially escalate. But the interesting part here, Jim, is that all of this is happening when the rest of the region is pretty well distracted. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things that jump out at this. One, this is that the nature of the conflict in the Middle East between Israel and its foes hasn't changed. You can argue that Israel is heavy-handed or that they always respond with maximum force. You can make those arguments, but it's very hard to, you know, the character of the Israeli people and the character of their government and the way they pursue things is just fundamentally different from that of the Palestinians and Hamas and the Fatah and the Palestinian Authority. You know, that ultimately we have one side that is dedicated to brutality. Those teenagers were no threat to anybody, and they got executed just for who they were. And you cannot reach a negotiated peace with people who are determined to wipe you out. And of course, I'm sure the response to this is that John Kerry is going to redouble his efforts and go back to the well one more time and insist that if we just try really, really hard this time, we can get both sides to come to an agreement. When it really comes down to, look, you know, the moment the Israelis said, look, we are no longer determined to drive the Jews to the sea, that we will, you know, we recognize Israel's right to exist and we recognize Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. That changes everything. But they're never going to get to that because their culture has been marinating in this hatred and fury and kind of irrational scapegoating of Israel for, you know, now generations. The only kind of silver line to this is that, look, we look, you know, this is occurring when, as I mentioned earlier, you know, they've declared a new caliphate in between Iraq and Syria, so that's a mess. Afghanistan isn't looking much better. Everybody's on edge about the rise of ISIS and then militarism. Iran is still pursuing its nuclear ambitions. Egypt is still, you know, a battle between populist uprisings and Muslim Brotherhood and fundamentalism versus these autocratic military-style rulers. The whole region's a mess. So if Israel decides to start going after the leaders of their organizations that are hostile to them, you know, climax of the Godfather style, it's possible that the rest of the region is too distracted by its own problems to really get that unified damn you Israel response that usually greets these sorts of things. And in fact, a couple times during Syria's civil war, we saw Israel taking action, and their attitude is, look, we don't really care. We don't like Assad. We don't like the rebels. There are no good guys over there, but we'll take whatever action we need to. Ended up bombing a couple key sites in there because they deemed that what was in those sites was going to be a threat to them. So maybe this is an opportunity for Israel, but it's really awful that, once again, three innocent teenagers have to die to create an environment where people realize just the scale of the threat and the implacability of the hatred that they face every single day.
And one of those teenagers apparently had dual citizenship in the United States as well as Israel. So interesting. There hasn't really been, as far as I can tell, much of a response from our administration on that, but perhaps one is forthcoming. On to the crazy martini now. And if there ever was a depressing crazy martini, it would be this one from the Washington Times. The Department of Veterans Affairs has issued an apology after a Massachusetts widow received a letter offering her husband an appointment almost 2 years after he died. Doug Chase, a Vietnam veteran, was diagnosed with a brain tumor in 2011. His widow, Suzanne, of Acton, Massachusetts, told a CBS affiliate in Boston in 2012, she said she tried to move her husband's medical care from Boston to the VA hospital in Bedford so they could be closer to home, but they waited 4 months and never heard anything. He died in August of 2012. She said she received a letter in the mail 2 weeks ago that was addressed to her husband saying that he could call to make an appointment. At the bottom of the letter, dated June 12th, it reads, "We are committed to providing primary care in a timely manner and would greatly appreciate a prompt response." The widow said the VA had to know her husband was dead because she applied for funeral benefits and was denied. In response to this story getting out, the Department of Veterans Affairs issues pretty much your boilerplate rhetoric about how we regret that it happened and we're taking actions to correct situations from like this from happening again. So, Jim, it turns out it's not just in Phoenix, as we've documented over the past several weeks. So this is systemic pretty much everywhere.
This is what usually we like to chuckle with our crazy martini, like the, you know, body switching alien theory of yesterday. But this one, the only thing you can say is that this is a case where better late than never isn't really true. And well, perhaps this comes, like, there is this kind of perverse irony to the circumstance. I suppose you could say, well, somebody somewhere is finally working on that backlog. But again, the idea that they don't know that someone who they turned down funeral benefits to is dead kind of illustrates the inanity and the complete lack of intercommunication and ability to keep records straight and clear is kind of, you know, abysmal and appalling. We have a new guy in charge of VA, comes from private sector experience. We'll see if it works out. Wishing him the very best, but look, the track record is not great in this area. The suspicion is that at some point the public will lose interest, and it'll be another couple of years, and it'll take another god-awful scandal for people to start taking it seriously again.
Yeah, certainly the case. And this is one of the most massive bureaucracies we've got. Billions upon billions of dollars poured into this, and the efficiency is just deplorable, and it shows what an entrenched bureaucracy does to efficiency. And this is certainly the most serious case. It's one thing if it's not a life and death issue, but the VA certainly is. And as we've mentioned in the past, it's the weed agency kind of on steroids with what's going on here with the VA.
I want to thank you for that plug, Greg, because I would feel guilty if I did that. But if you do it, it fits in very well. So thank you, Greg.
You're welcome. We're going to be off the 4th, but we're going to be back tomorrow. Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.